people will believe you when you tell them who you are. People don't realize that. They use words about like how they're bad at this and how they can never do that. Women do this all the time. They just give you a litany of all the things they can't do. And what I say, I do so much keynote speaking, and I say to people all the time, people believe you when you tell them who you are. So why on earth would you give them words that they can use against you? Be the best version of yourself. Show up as yourself. Use the language of self-love about yourself. And you'll find that confidence because people will see you the way you see yourself.
Mama! Let's reimagine mom life together. Mama House Goals is your hub for relatable support and helpful resources that help you fuel yourself alongside motherhood. Your identity is bigger than mom, and whatever your goals are, together we're making them a reality. I want you to think about what it means to you to be powerful. When you think about yourself as the most powerful woman in the room, what does that mean to you? Our guest today, Lydia Finette, is the founder and CEO of the Lydia Finette Agency, a boutique agency representing the best-in-class charity auctioneers. And over her 2-decades-long career, Lydia served as the global managing director of strategic partnerships for Christie's and reshaped the fundraising landscape as the world's leading charity auctioneer. She has single-handedly raised over $1 billion for more than 800 organizations and broken down countless barriers for women in the auction industry. She's widely recognized for her poise and power on stage. She has stood alongside celebrities including Bruce Springsteen, Hugh Jackman, Elton John, Matt Damon, and Jerry Seinfeld to raise record-breaking donations for the most notable charities across the globe. Not only is she just breaking down barriers and showing us what it's all about, she is also a mama of three. She's New York City mama, showing us how to live, how to go after her own dreams and goals, how to be here for her kids, and so much more. She's the author of 2 best-selling books, The Most Powerful Woman in the Room Is You and Claim Your Confidence, as well as the podcast host of Claim Your Confidence in collaboration with Rockefeller Center. Her first book was optioned by Netflix in 2022 for a series that will be produced by Shernan Entertainment, starring Kiernan Shipka as the lead. How cool. This conversation is so fun because we talk about things that I personally cannot relate to at all. But then on the flip side of that, how we all have this common theme and how we can see ourselves in each other's stories. We talk about city living. We talk about overcoming working mom guilt. We talk about how to find the balance, how to find your roadmap to life, how to be the most confident woman in the room, and how to really find the importance of confidence in your relationships, your journey, who you are, and what you want to pursue. This is so good. Dive on in. Tell me your biggest takeaway. Lydia, I'm so excited to have you here. We were just chatting about all the things, life, mom life, work life behind the scenes. And I want to just bring our audience up to speed because I think it is so easy to sit here and look at you and I'm like, wow, this amazing mom of three in New York City doing all these amazing things, retreats, books. Like, how did you get here? Take us back 10 years ago. And what was Lydia doing then with a 1-year-old and 2 more that weren't here yet?
A decade ago, I had been living in New York for a decade. I'm in my mid-40s now. And my first child, as you said, was 1 year old. I had been working for Christie's Auction House, which is an auction house that sells fine art for basically since college. I'd interned there in college and then stayed there throughout. And I knew that I wanted more children for sure. So I was in that headspace of, all right, these are the years where I'm going to have babies. So I'd been working in the company for a long time. I'd had a good amount of success. I was in a really good place in my team. And I realized that was going to be my next couple of years. So I had my full-time job at Christie's. I also had a night job that I'd been doing as part of my job at Christie's where I would take auctions on stages at night. So that was a funny side part of my life, getting on stage pregnant 3 times.
Amazing. How was the feedback while you were on those stages pregnant? Because sometimes it's totally well received and people are like, look at that mama go. I'm so excited for her. And other times there's a lot of negative feedback when you're in the professional world and you're trying to mom at the same time. What was your experience?
Yeah, I definitely was one of very few women up there and pretty much the only pregnant one that I knew at the time doing it. So yeah. I always approached it with a sort of twofold. First of all, foremost, a lot of people said to me when I was pregnant, well, like, now you're pregnant, you'll never be able to get on stage, which of course made me think, watch me. I'm like, give me a challenge and I will rise. Let this just me to the core. Just watch. I'll do this. I was dying of morning sickness and still doing it just to prove to everyone and I think to myself that you could do both of those things. I'm sure that there was negativity. I would get on stage with a lot of humor and I would say things like, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I wonder right now, who is more uncomfortable? Is it you or is it me? Because I feel like I could be at the hospital tonight if we don't raise a lot of money really fast. And so people would be like, oh my God. I used to say that my pregnancy results were the best results I've ever had because I think people just wanted me to get off stage. But I had a lot of fun while I was up there. And interestingly, I was very morning sick all day. As we know, morning sickness lasts all the time. I was very sick. And the only time I felt good during my pregnancies when I was on stage, it was the only time I felt like a normal person where the morning sickness would go away. And I think it was like all the adrenaline rushing in and just being present and having to do all the things. And I would be like asleep in a cab, get to the stage, get on the stage, like Willy Wonka coming out of a chocolate factory and the cane, jump up on stage and then get back in a cab and just pass out on the way home.
It is so interesting you bring that up because this pregnancy, I'm currently 31 weeks pregnant as we're recording this, is the only pregnancy I've had like pretty severe morning sickness. And like you said, it's been all day. And I had this period of my first trimester where I had two large events, one I had a keynote for and one I was just attending. And I felt fine on stage and attending that event. But going to it, after it, everywhere, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sick otherwise. And so then I started asking myself, I was like, are you making yourself sick? Are you not actually as sick as you think you are? Because how are you able to show up in these areas? And I think it is that you have this adrenaline. And being a mom, we know that we just make it happen, right? We just push through. So throughout your career and throughout your motherhood journey, how have you found that balance of pushing yourself? And there's this phrase of like giving yourself grace and slowing down and being present.
I think for me, the giving myself grace is really more around the mom guilt than anything. Physically, the physical and mental element of me in my makeup is that I will push through just because that's who I am at the core. If you've read my second book, you know we had this horrific car accident. And even at that point where my body was decimated and I broke 7 ribs, I had to have a spinal fusion. My face was ripped up. I mean, it was horrible just from a physical standpoint for me, plus the mental aspect of the 3 of my children had been in the car accident. They had injuries. My husband had shattered his wrist. It was about as nightmarish a scenario as possible. Even through that and through the recovery of that, I always felt very strong. And that has played a large part. I mean, the physicality, like being a strong person of a strong body who takes care of myself and makes sure that I exercise, where I've really had to give myself grace is around the mental part, the mental toughness of having a demanding career, loving that career, also loving being a mom, wanting my children to feel like I'm there and present as well in the moments where those two things don't intersect because of a crazy travel schedule. What I've really learned to do is use phrases that explain where I am in the process of a year. So I'm very specific with my children about my schedule. My auction schedule is incredibly rigorous for certain months of the year. So April is just full on. I'm on stage every single night, a lot of May as well, beginning of June. That is what I call to the children a sprint. Like, mommy's in a sprint right now. You're going to be zipping up my dress as I run out of the door. You'll likely be home when I get home too. Wide awake because you guys never go to bed when I want you to. But that's a different podcast. I think for me, that helps me to even mentally. I'm like, when I'm in a sprint, everything goes to the wayside. Like, I was in such a sprint recently between the retreat that you mentioned, a huge auction that raised $33 million in an afternoon, and then 3 speeches, and then a huge summit that I was keynoting at. And all those things were condensed in 12 days. And I literally got to the point about 6 days in that I was like, I have to stop answering email. I literally don't have the mental capacity to get to my emails right now and do things in the future. So for the next 2 days, I'm just not answering any emails unless it is business critical. And I didn't. And I've learned that allowing myself the grace to be like, all right, today is not the day I'll be texting my friends back about these memes that they're sending me. And like, I'm not going to make it to that dinner tonight because I know that I don't have enough energy to do the things that I want to do and show up for my children if I go. So just being really strategic about where I'm putting my energy, how I'm explaining things to myself and to my children, and that helps me show up in the way that I want to show up.
How do you identify when your bucket is being filled with this full schedule and when you're maybe overdoing it? in the sense of you can, like you said, it's in you. You're innately able to keep going. But whether it's our career or motherhood or entrepreneurship, there comes a time where we can take a step back and say, is this even what I wanted? Am I even doing the things that I wanted to do? Do I want my schedule this full? There's not one right answer, right? It's different for everyone. But how do you check in with yourself and know, okay, is this what I should be doing, what I want to be doing?
Yeah. Listen, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm also the person who makes the money in our family. So I would love to have the ability to say, oh, I can take my feet off the accelerator all the time. But the reality is, as an entrepreneur who is creating this life that we live in, there's a huge expectation that I set on myself for what I want our life to be. I could give this all up and move to a much less expensive city and really scale it back, but that's not really what I want to do. So I give myself that leeway where every once in a while, when I am tired after doing a lot of different things, I'm like, if you want to change it, you can. You don't have to do this. And so saying that to myself and then thinking, well, do I really want to do that? No. So then I keep doing it. But I also am good about assessing my schedule and thinking about if it's not working, how I can change it. So last November, I took basically over the course of 14 days, I took probably like, I think it was 6 auctions 1 week with 1 day off and then 7 auctions the second week. One was in Portland, Oregon. And I got to Portland and typically I wake up early, I'm cranking my emails and all this stuff. And I typically, when I travel, I love to get out and go see all the things on the days that I'm there. So I'm not squandering time.
Yeah.
And instead of doing any of that, I literally got my computer and I went into the lobby of the hotel and I sat on a chair for like 6 hours and just went through my emails, just spent some time doing some housekeeping within the email list and all the things that I typically wouldn't do because I'd be like trying to see everything in Portland, Oregon. And then they had a gym upstairs with a pool. And I went upstairs to the pool and I just sat by the pool. This may seem like something that a lot of people would do if they went to a nice hotel. Like, I never do that, ever. Yeah. I will work out. I will walk the city. I will do the things. And I was like, you need a break because you have a huge auction tonight. You're physically exhausted. Like, just stop. So I think those are the moments that I'm like, okay, you need to think about not doing that again, not doing like 13 auctions, 2 in a night, 1 in a different city, and being very strategic about when you do the ones that you're going to do so that you don't get to a point where you are literally exhausted. But I think, again, that takes having done it. Now I know I'm not going to do it again.
That's exactly what I heard when you were saying that is you sometimes have to do it because otherwise, how are you going to know what feels good and be able to reevaluate? And, you know, there's different tools that we can pull out of our toolbox that help with this. And we're going to talk a lot about confidence because that's definitely one of them, having the confidence to live your life and make those decisions. What are some other ways that you've learned this skill set to figure out what feels good for you and reevaluate? Do you have a formal routine or reflection practice, or is it just sitting on the plane on the way home thinking about it?
The plane rides for me, I'm not going to lie, are a lot of thinking time. I do all my best writing on a plane. I do a lot of sketching out of my goals for the year, the goals for the next 6 months, the goal for the next 5 years. A lot of that comes to me in those moments of quiet, which I'm not great about creating for myself. But I will say another time that I find a lot of clarity is with exercise, especially with running. Pre-accident, I was a huge runner. I ran probably from the age of about 15 or 16, 5 to 6 miles a day, like religiously for years. Yeah. I ran marathons. I ran half marathons. Running has always been such a huge part of my life. After the accident, because of my spinal fusion, it just didn't feel very good, especially at the beginning. I'm back now in a place where I can run again. I don't run the miles that I used to run, but that for me is the time, I like to say a lot of my books were written at the end of a run. I would come home and be like, I've got it. And then I just sit and crank for an hour. And that's the time where I ideate. And I think we all need that over the course of our life. Like, we all need to find the thing that puts us almost into a meditative state. For some people, that will actually be meditation. But running for me, a lot of times when I'm running, I don't even remember where I am. But I'm mulling things over. I'm thinking things through. And those are the moments where I'm like, all right, that was too much. Next year, don't do that in November. Take out that Wednesday so that you have Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah. Having those practices to evaluate and reflect are so important. And I don't think it's something that's really taught to us. It's something that we kind of, as we put things on our plate, realize, oh, hey, I need to find a time to reflect and slow down. Knowing how important that is as a parent, or have you found ways to be able to help your kids do that at a younger age, to teach them to say, hey, you have a stressful week at school or you have this going on, here's how you can be thoughtful and reflect and think about things.
Well, with my oldest, my 11-year-old is, she's just like a real first child. And the schools in New York are incredibly rigorous at a very young age. And as a parent right now, all you're hearing about is anxiety. I obviously am not, she's too young for social media and I don't want her to have it. And I keep saying to her every time, she's like, well, so-and-so has it fun. I'm like, I want you to find an article where it says that it's good for you to have social media. And when you find that article that's like, you should give young tweens an iPhone and lots of social media apps. I was like, when you find that article, which you can't because you can't search for anything because you don't have a phone. But like, when you do, let me know because then I will give you a phone. Obviously, keeping her off social media is a huge part of what I want to do for the foreseeable future. Obviously, it doesn't last forever, but I want to keep her off as long as I can. But when it comes to school, she gets, she's, oh my gosh, I have so much homework. I have so much homework. And it's always like this, I've got a lot to do. I've got to get it done. I have so much homework. And I'm like, all right, how much is due tomorrow? She's like, I have one assignment due tomorrow. When are these due? She's like, in the next 2 weeks. I'm like, just relax, honey. Like, you don't have to do everything today. Like, just micro-step it, little pieces at a time. You're chipping it away. And I love that you are thinking about this, but it shouldn't be thinking about it to the point where you're making yourself stressed about it. You're in fifth grade, and I want you to have good study skills, but not at the risk of completely destroying your week and making you feel like you can't sleep. Those are just not things that are, in my opinion, a good way to live your life, especially at that age. And I think I've learned a little bit of that just watching myself, like pushing and pushing and being like, it's okay to also not push all the time.
Yeah. And knowing that maybe you are going to push over the next 2 weeks, but let's only push so far today. And then let's reevaluate tomorrow and get there.
Exactly.
Let's just get through today, first of all. Doesn't mean we're not going to do the projects for the next 2 weeks.
Rome is still going to be there.
I love that. Matthew McConaughey recently shared his perspective on his kids on social media. And I won't remember all of it, but part of what he shared is he really helped his son identify who he wanted to be in that place. And he said, go figure out who you follow and why you like what they share and what that would mean for you. Who do you want to be in this space? And he said, before you do it on the internet, think about how you're doing it in real life. And I think his son's a little bit older, but I thought that was really interesting as a parent to say, like, when you're in the classroom, when you're out on the field, when you're in the car, what type of friend, what type of person are you? What are you putting out there? And when you go onto social media, it's really easy to just post that picture or put that status out there where you don't actually understand that's now who you are. You're posting this version of you. So I thought that was really interesting. And I think as my kids get older, it's something I want to try to remember because like you said, there's so much going on for these young kids. They're anxious. They have homework. They have all of this. And then they're resulting to a quick fix on social media that isn't always a quick fix. Now, I can hear so many moms in my community, even in myself, where there's times where we can be short, I don't even want to say tempered, but we don't have the patience to show up as the best parent that we would like to be. And I think one of the things that really helps that is getting really clear on what type of parent you want to be. And you were talking about working through the mental state of mom guilt. And I believe that mom guilt is a fear of judgment from others and a lack of confidence in ourselves. That's how I define mom guilt. And I believe when we're confident, we can really reduce that mom guilt because we know that we're showing up the best way. How do you recommend that someone takes the first step to identify if they even are confident? How does someone know if they're confident? If they're like, I'm confident in this bucket, but not that one, or I'm second guessing myself. For a long time, people would tell me, Kelsey, you're so outgoing. You'll walk in a room, you're the first to say something. And I'd say, that's true. But for the next 2 weeks, I'm probably questioning every single thing that I said. And I have this secondary lack of confidence, but I can walk in the room and say it. So how do you help people find their version of confidence?
I truly, and I agree with you absolutely about confidence being something that in many ways people think is what you're putting out there externally. But I like to say that confidence is an inside job. If you have built up the structures that you need and you have built up the strength within and you've tested yourself and retested yourself and put yourself in situations that aren't necessarily comfortable all the time, you will find confidence in yourself because you'll realize that you're stronger than you think. I think if you live in a perfect little box where everything's easy and great, great, that's fantastic. But if something happens to you, it's going to be harder for you to bounce back because you've never put yourself out there. It can be paper thin confidence if you haven't built it up with the back end side of it. And then I think surrounding yourself with friends and family and people who really see you for who you are and who you're not seeking affirmation from, but they're giving it to you anyway. That's a really great way to build up a community of people who keep you in that confident state. If you're around people who you put something out there and they say to you like, you're going to feel that. And if that's all you're hearing all the time, it doesn't matter how strong you are, that's going to get to you. But I think when you get to the place where you're confident, you realize that a lot of the things that you're hearing from other people have nothing to do with you. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. I went out with a bunch of my friends in New York a couple of weeks ago to the Madonna concert. Madonna was the first concert I ever saw in my life. I'm not a big concert goer. I've probably been to like 5 in my whole life. But when one of our friends was like, should we all go to Madonna? I was, yes, let's do it. I went when I was 10 with my aunt. I remember it was so fun. I love her music. I know every song. It'll be great. So we all went out. We had such a fun night. It was a late night. And the next morning I got up to take my kids to school and I did not feel great. And I remember getting on the subway and running into another mom who I know who's a working mom and she's the CEO of a company. And she said to me on the train, you really go out a lot for a mom of 3. And it was so funny because I feel like if she'd said that to me 5 years ago, I would have like wept in my bathroom afterwards. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, that's just jealousy, pure and simple. Like, you really go out a lot as a mom of 3. I'm like, no, I really don't. If I'm out, I'm usually on the stage working. I've been to 5 concerts in my life. This is not something I do regularly, but man, was it fun. We talk about mom guilt and you said it well. You get a lot of it from other people, right? It's like, oh, you travel so much. I'm like, I know. I love to travel. And then people don't know what to do with that because they expect me to come back and be like, I feel so guilty. I have all these kids. Like, I mean, of course I miss my kids. I don't need to say that aloud. If you have kids, you miss them when you're not with them. But that doesn't mean I don't also love my job and love to travel. So I think confidence in general is just something that we are constantly working on. I think people think other people have a lot more of it than they often do. But as long as you are working on it from within, ultimately, I think it ends in a good place for you.
Oh, so good. One of the things you said is that you really have to challenge yourself to build that confidence. How do you recommend that someone takes that very first step? If they don't know what they want to challenge themselves in, is there like some self-discovery of figuring out the first place to start?
I like to say you should try something that you feel a little scared about. Scared, nervous and excited, but a little scared. Because ultimately, that's what's really fun. We were talking about the retreat beforehand, and I was saying about having done a retreat where I'd never done a retreat before. And I got a call from this beautiful hotel outside of New York asking me if I would put one on. And I was kind of like, yeah, because I was nervous and excited when they asked me to do it. So it made me think I should try it. It takes a lot of confidence to put out there on social media that you're having a retreat. As I said to you, it was expensive. I didn't realize how expensive it would be when I told them I would do it. And I was really like waiting for people to show up. And I was a little scared and embarrassed that people weren't going to show up. Ultimately, as I told you, like the first month after everything went out, I had 4 people for a 4-day retreat. I was just like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. And then slowly things started to build and ultimately ended up with 12 in total. The elation that I felt, the confidence that I felt in my ability to put together 11 workshops and create this magical experience for these people who've trusted me with 4 days of their life. That for me gave me a confidence boost that akin to something I haven't done in years. It made me want to do more crazy kind of things that felt a little uncomfortable. And I think as long as I keep following that and doing that, ultimately it's going to be the right thing.
Yeah. And even just from being on stage, I'm sure the very first time that you were on stage, you were so nervous. And now you're like, yeah, I'm going to do 13 in 2 weeks and it's going to be fine. And I think that repetitive skill is what you have to do. It's no different than working out for the first time or the first night that you're home with your baby. And then, you know, you have an 11-year-old and you're like, I've got this. We're going to be fine.
Exactly.
I think that repetitiveness is what it is that we want to accomplish. It's confidence and it's discipline. How does discipline show up for you on those days that you don't want to do it? You don't want to do whatever it is, the workout, the stage. How do you push through?
Discipline is such a huge part of success. I feel like I can't say that enough. It has played such a huge part in my life. Like when I get off a 5-hour flight to California and I'm in California for 6 hours and then I get on stage and take a red eye home to be home with my kids the next morning, do I feel like going to the gym? I do not. But I do know if I go to the gym, it will wake me up. I'll feel all those endorphins when I get on stage. I'll feel better when I get off the plane the next morning. And so I make myself go. you know, it showed up in such a way for me after the accident. My body was atrophied. I was in bed for almost 2 weeks after the surgeries. And I was like, I remember going to PT for the first time. I had played 2.5 hours of tennis the morning of the accident. I was in, because of COVID, I was feeling great. Everything was wonderful in terms of my exercise regime. I went from 100 to zero overnight. And then they allowed me to go to PT 2 weeks after. I mean, when I tell you, Kelsey, just walking the block to the PT place from my apartment, it was like more painful than I can even describe. And then getting there, and they'd be like, okay, today we're going to do one lunge. Like one lunge, because I wasn't allowed to bend, lift, or twist for 7 months. One lunge, wow. So I could pick things up off the floor. But what I realized and what I focused on was not, oh, I can't do anything. Every morning I would say to myself, and then I would write down, what is something I can do today that I couldn't do yesterday? And it was micro some days. Like I can lean to the right today. Like that is what I can do. I can pick my left arm up with less pain than I did yesterday. I can take a shower after 2 weeks. I can do 10 lunges after 3 weeks. And it was like these micro steps. That discipline, they're like, a lot of people don't do the physical therapy when they come home. I would get myself out of bed before anyone else. I would do that physical therapy every single morning because I knew if I showed up for myself, then my body would come back to me. And it has. And that can be applied to anything in life. You show up for yourself and you show up day after day, it will come back to you.
Are there books that you've read, or is it an association, even your husband, that help you have this mentality of, I am going to overcome this. I'm going to follow the right path. I'm going to be disciplined. I'm going to do these things. Because so often we can see people who say, I don't know how to be disciplined. I don't know how to encourage myself to write down a message to myself every day of what my progress is. And I think about the people that overcome these really tragic, horrible things in their life and just make their day-to-day better on a smaller scale too. And it's because they made a choice, right? They made a decision and they made a choice. And they kept persevering through. They had that resilience. Did you find that in yourself, or did you look outward to have it poured into you and supported from books or people or anything else?
Look, this is all an inside job. We can all play around and pretend that, oh, well, this person made me do it. It's like, you have to want to do it. That's the hardest piece for people to hear. And I feel like everybody's waiting for a magic bullet, but nobody picked me up off the ground and took me to that rehab place every day. I walked myself there. But I will tell you what I do have. I have a very strong family. My parents are wonderful parents. My siblings are hard on me, but wonderful siblings. I have a great husband. And again, I'm not saying this to paint a rosy picture. We, like everybody else, have all the ups and downs of families and marriage. But when that accident happened, my parents and my in-laws and my sister-in-law and my brother and sister were sleeping in the hospital room in the pediatric ward with my children because my husband and I were upstairs. My sister slept in an upright chair because she didn't realize that all chairs fold out. My sister didn't realize that the first night. And I was like so out of it from all the surgeries that I had no idea what was going on. I didn't think to tell her that she could actually sleep in the bed. So she fell asleep in an upright chair between my husband, because he and I were sharing a room at that point, between us. And so that has been a core of my life, that my family shows up in that way. But they also know, like I know, that they can only show up so much. They can't make me do the PT. They can't make me do that. But I'll tell you one really funny story about when I was recovering from the accident the first day in the hospital. My mother had been with me and my sister came to sleep overnight because I was there for so long. People were coming and going. And I would, after the surgery, anytime I tried to sit up, I would like black out from the pain. So I would like black out and they would put oxygen on me. And I remember I had to go to the bathroom and I said, like, can you just get like the bedpan or whatever? And my sister was sitting next to me. She's like, you're not using a bedpan. Go to the bathroom. I'm like, I can't stand up. And she's like, you need to stand up. I'm like, I can't stand up. I'm going to pass out. She's like, you got to stand up. Whereas my mother would have been like, okay, you know, like just lay down. We'll get the nurse and stuff. My sister was like, come on, get up. And she made me walk to the bathroom and I did it. And you talk about confidence and overcoming things. Knowing I could do that, all of a sudden, I was like, wait a second, maybe I could walk to the hall. Like it was just, it was like a remarkable door opening. I say that nobody does things. My sister obviously did. But again, once the door is open, you still have to walk through it and you still have to do the work. Yeah. Surrounding yourself with positive influences in your life is never a bad idea.
Yeah. How do you create that culture as a mom in your household of the pushing forward and pulling it back and saying, hey, you don't need to get this all done now? Are there conversations that you have that are even just like natural? I'm thinking about like a sentence at dinner that kind of just passes and you hope it sticks, but you're not really sure if it's going to or not, of just having resilience and moving forward. And especially having three kids, I'm sure they all have different personalities. And so bringing in this culture that you want to create in your home, but knowing everyone's going to take it differently.
I say a lot of the time, and you start to hear your kids repeating things back to you, which is really funny. But I've always said to my older daughter, when it came to doing work, she's like, maybe I'm not going to write that sentence, because she doesn't actually like writing, like handwriting.
Yeah.
And she said I only had to write two sentences. And I was like, there's always room at the extra mile, because nobody ever goes there. I was like, but that's where success is, honey. So you got to think about not just doing what they're asking you to do, but doing a little more whenever you can. And I heard her say it to her six-year-old sister, who is supposed to do her weekend journal where she writes like three sentences. And my daughter was just writing in huge letters so she could take more of the page up. And my older daughter said to her, she's like, Eloise, there's always room at the extra mile. And I'm like, oh my God, here we go. But I think just making them realize why you do things is important. Yeah. Making them understand your mindset, because then you start to see the things that you know have worked for you in them. Not always. Obviously, they're kids, so they'll have their own lives and their own paths. But as a mom, I want my children to be able to do whatever they want in their lives because they've had the discipline and they've shown up in a way for themselves that allows them to do that. And what's made me successful in my life is showing up for myself. Showing up for myself as a mom, showing up for my friends as a good friend, showing up for my family as a good sister and to my parents as a daughter. Those things are really important, and you can model that for your kids and they see that and they notice.
Yeah. It reminds me, your first book, The Most Powerful Woman in the Room. And when I first read that title, I felt multiple ways about it. And especially for our community, it sometimes is the most powerful woman in the room being on the stage. Sometimes it's the woman sitting next to her child reading them a book for bedtime. It's brushing teeth, changing diapers. It's navigating the bullying that happened at school that day. What was the very first ideation behind the book, coming back to the most powerful woman in the room when you chose that title? What did it mean to you in that season?
The book is actually titled The Most Powerful Woman in the Room Is You. But yeah. I sold it to the New York Times. I sold it based on an article that was written in the New York Times. And when they wrote the article, I told them the book was called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room, because I hadn't written the book. I'd only written one chapter of the book. And then I sold it based on that. But as I started writing the book, I realized that the book wasn't about me as the most powerful woman in the room. It was like whoever was reading it, they should feel that. And I truly believe we can all feel that in whatever way we want to feel that. If you are the mom who is like killing it that day and your kids are paying attention and things are going well and you are feeling good and confident about the way that you are showing up for yourself in your life and doing the things with your kids, like the most powerful woman in the room is you. And that's how I feel when I'm on stage. I feel like I get on that stage and there's no question the most powerful woman in the room is me at that moment. But again, it's an inside job. And that's the whole point of it. I remember taking an auction in Germany, but the woman who was the director of the museum had bought all these books because I was coming over asking me to sign. And she goes, so I guess my question is, who is the most powerful woman in the room? It's you. So it's you and you? And she just couldn't wrap her head around it. I was like, the point is that it's all of us. And she was like, but how does that work? I was like, it's a book title. Like, it just works. I don't know. But I do think that's what the book is really about. It's we can all be powerful. In life, there always seems to be this competitiveness against women. And my point is that it's actually not about anyone else, right?
No.
It's all about you. And if you feel powerful, you are powerful. And if you say you're powerful, you are powerful. And people will believe you when you tell them who you are. People don't realize that. They use words about like, how they're bad at this and how they can never do that. Women do this all the time. They just give you a litany of all the things they can't do. And what I say, I do so much keynote speaking, and I say to people all the time, people believe you when you tell them who you are. So why on earth would you give them words that they can use against you? Be the best version of yourself. Show up as yourself. Use the language of self-love about yourself. And you'll find that confidence because people will see you the way you see yourself.
Yeah. As I'm hearing you speak, I can see as an adult how we can make these choices a little bit easier. It doesn't feel easier, but at the end of the day, we understand that we're in control and that it's up to us as an adult. I have been seeing so much lately about bullying and kids. And I think that you can tell kids all day long, you're in charge of how you feel, your confidence is within you. But when there's bullying happening and people that are just constantly pulling you down and you don't have the awareness as a child to understand that that person has their own struggles or that you shouldn't listen to them and you should shut them out, what do you do? Have you experienced this as a mom, or do you even just have as a professional feedback to say, how do you navigate it when there's just someone in your ear constantly pulling you down?
I think twofold. First and foremost, in my opinion, and this is having dealt with a lot of different things with our kids after the accident and just like the way that they're processing things, I can tell you one thing that worked for our family, and I think works for any child going through anything, getting them to talk. Yeah. Like literally talking things until they almost have no more meaning. We talked about our accident with our children almost daily afterwards. We'd be walking down the street and an ambulance would pass. And I would say to them, how do you guys feel right now? Because I'm feeling a little scared by that sound. My daughter said it best. She's like, honestly, mommy, every time I see an ambulance and you're not with us, I think you're in it, because I was taken in an ambulance and then they followed in their own ambulances. Would never have in a million years thought. And then because they all thought I died in the car, a lot of nightmares about losing me, me not being there, not being able to reach me. We talk it to death. She wakes up, she's upset. We talk it to death. Tell me more about it. What a silly way for me to die. A tornado? Really? We talk it to death until it holds no meaning. And I think bullying is very much the same thing. All of that stuff gets trapped in those little kids' bodies. When we get worried, when you're working at work and you hear a bad rumor about yourself, you get scared and you talk it to death. I think with bullying, there also has to be the other side of that. We're adults. We get involved. We don't let it go too far. But the other part of building confidence is making people confident to talk about things, because that releases the stuff that gets trapped and makes us anxious and scary. I think that's really, in my life, has been the best thing. Even with the retreat, I felt so embarrassed when there were four people coming. And then I told my husband, and he was like, you'll make it the best retreat for four people that ever was. And all of a sudden, it didn't feel embarrassing anymore. And then I told everyone, because once you start talking about it, it doesn't hold weight. So I think teaching children not to hide things, not that things are not scary and that bad things aren't meant to be kept a secret, is a really huge part of something that we all have to do with our kids, because especially with social media, it's so isolating. And then they're in their own heads. And so making them comfortable saying the words out loud, even when things aren't good or don't make them feel good, is a surefire recipe for allowing them to unlock those feelings and not letting it bottle up.
I love that. Now, for me, having confidence, one of the reasons that I think it is so important is for that. Because if we're not confident, how can I teach my kids to be confident? How do I have the relationship? At the time that we're recording this, it's the day after Valentine's Day. And there are so many women that on Valentine's Day are disappointed. But at the end of the day, it is up to us to love on ourselves and be confident and communicate in different ways. But that comes from knowing your worth, knowing you're deserving, and really taking that first action. How do you see this show up in the importance of relationships? And how could you speak to that you aren't going to get the love that you desire if you're not creating that love and confidence within yourself?
Yeah. I do think that confidence is such an important key to a relationship and being honest about who you are and who you want to be with and what that relationship looks like. A day like Valentine's Day to me is so hilarious because I've been with my husband we've been together 18 years. We've been married for, I think we're coming on 13. Yeah. And a marriage is long. An 18-year relationship is long. And there are so many different components to it. But it was so funny yesterday, Valentine's Day. I woke up, I'd bought cards for my kids. I had little chocolates that I bought at CVS. Don't think that I did anything grand. And a card for my husband with like a big thing of Ghirardelli chocolates. And by big, medium sized, because I knew I was going to eat them all anyway. I woke up super early. My husband was not up yet. And if he doesn't, we usually do things in the morning. Started with my family. This is the way we do it. It's like breakfast in bed, flowers, the whole nine yards for birthdays, anniversaries, that kind of thing. And it was like 6:30 when I woke up and my husband wasn't awake. And I was like, oh my God, I think he's forgotten Valentine's Day. So I put the cards out, put the chocolates on the breakfast table, got his card out. And my husband came out and I was like, happy Valentine's Day. And I swear to God, Kelsey, if you had seen his face, I knew he'd forgotten. And he was like, happy Valentine's Day. And I was like, I can't wait to see what I get this afternoon. It was so funny. And he's like, yeah, because Valentine's Day is a whole day. And the kids are like, did you get mommy something? He's like, I will have mommy something by this afternoon. I have laughed for hours over it. And I think if I really cared about Valentine's Day, which I don't, I just hate it as a day. Our anniversary is in 5 days every week. So it's just like, it ends up being whatever. I would have said to my husband, it is really important for me that you show up on Valentine's Day with flowers and chocolate. And here's something else that I want. I don't care about the day. I think it's actually really funny. But if that is what you want out of your relationship, you got to tell them. Because honestly, like, I'm on the flip side of that. If my husband wanted something for Valentine's Day, then I might have really screwed it up because I had no idea. So don't sit around thinking that the person sitting across the table from you, just because you love them, just because you've been with them forever, knows everything about you. None of us are like that. And when you throw in kids and you throw in a busy life, you forget things and you mistake things. So we talk about giving people grace. Give the person in the relationship grace. I came home last night. My husband had cooked dinner. He bought flowers. He had like chocolates for the kids. He had a chocolate cake for me. And I was like, this cake is so amazing. Did you get this 50% off? And he was like, it was reduced in price. But it's just, I think that sometimes like the world around us, like social media, everyone's posting their Valentine's. Like my I would never, that makes me cringe on every level because that's just not who we are as a couple. But I love that people do that and celebrate what they want to celebrate because they have the confidence to do that and their partner and who they are and the life that they're living. But also, if that's not who you are, that's okay too. And it's really funny to have a good Valentine's Day or bus story as well. So feel free to share that with me because I think that kind of stuff is hilarious. But if my husband's listening, he better not forget our anniversary.
But I love that you're saying both, right? You're like, hey, it's not that important to me. And it did make me smile when I came home and there was effort shown. Even saying you communicated, I can't wait to see what I get this afternoon. Like you're saying like, hey, show some effort, please. But I don't really care. And I'm not mad at you. And I'm the exact same way. I'm like, let's like acknowledge the day, but please don't buy me jewelry. But I love that you say also, if that is important to you, that's fine if it is. Yes. It's not to me either, but communicating it and not expecting people to know. And I think that can show up in our relationships, like our romantic relationships, as well as our kids. We can't expect things out of them if we don't communicate, and with ourselves to say like, okay, why am I feeling down? Why am I not feeling confident? Did you hit your goals? Did you do that discipline that we talked about? Are you speaking kindness into yourself? What is happening that's making you feel that way? I absolutely love that. Now, I could talk to you all day. I have so many things about your stories because pre-accident, post-accident, there's so many things to unpack. I myself live on 30 acres and we have a vineyard and our life is so different than the New York City lifestyle. And my five-year-old said the other day, he's like, Mom, why don't we live in a city? I want to live in a city. And I said, well, if we lived in a city, our life would look really different. You wouldn't be riding a four-wheeler after school. Both are great, but we probably are not going to live in the city anytime soon. But I said, what is it that you want to live in the city for? And so we were just talking through the differences. And I would love for you to just take us through a day in the life, even taking the kids to school on the subway. What are some of the things that feel so normal to you that are also challenges? Because when I look at it, I actually feel like the city life is really challenging to navigate because you have to do all these different things as a mom. I have a friend that lives in the city in San Francisco, and she feels different. She's like, it's easier because I can just go grab dinner. We can get pickup. Like, there's so many easier things. So I'd love for you to just unpack city mom life living, especially with three kids, and how it feels to you because you love it, right?
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's the best time to live in a city, in my opinion, is when you have babies because everything is walkable. And so your stroller is your car. You're never in and out of a car seat. You toss the baby in the sleeping bassinet and then you just head out on the road. They can sleep there. You can grocery shop and stick everything in the stroller. It's heaven. Things get increasingly complicated the more children you have, as you can imagine, because then you have children on scooters. You have a double stroller. There's a great amount of physicality to living in a city, which I love. I love that I'll do 20,000 steps without even going to the gym over the course of the day, just because I'm like going from point A to point B. I was saying to someone, it's interesting raising children in New York City. Like my oldest daughter, I said to her recently, like she got really good grades on her report card. And I was like, we'll have a mommy and Beatrice day that day. She's like, okay, I'm like, what do you want to do? She's like, sushi and Broadway? I'm like, yeah. Let's do it. Like that to me is the quintessential New York City child. That sushi and Broadway is like a Tuesday night. A typical day for us, we take our kids to school. My husband and I, basically depending on who has an earlier call or who has a meeting or who just doesn't feel like going in the morning, one of us, whoever is not taking the kids to school is responsible for breakfast. And so, you know, our early morning routine always starts off so nice. And at the end, I feel like someone's always yelling, get your shoes as we're leaving. We walk about 2 blocks to the subway. It takes us basically, depending on if we catch the train, 10 to 15 minutes from our door to the door of my kids' school. So it's pretty easy. And then we walk them to the door and drop them off at the door of school. And then if it's my turn, I walk back down to Tribeca from the school, which is about a mile and a half through Soho, which is where my brother lives, which is where I'm doing the podcast right now, because I have to go back uptown so I didn't have time to get all the way home. And it's amazing. It's like being on a movie set. If it's beautiful and sunny, it's gorgeous. If it's snowing, it's the city. So it's gritty as well. But it's a really cool way to wake up in the morning. And I love walking through the city and on my way back to the apartment. And then for me, it's just like I bounce around the city all the day doing a podcast in Rock Center, doing breakfast, lunch, coffee, you know, whatever it takes. Or sometimes I'm home doing podcasts and just doing work. And then one of us will usually go pick up the kids from school. We also have a sitter because with 3 kids in New York City, you sometimes need that extra person. So she's here 3 or 4 days a week and helps us get the kids from point A to point B from different things. And yeah, the kids do sports. Then we go home. They do theater and we're home. And if I don't have an auction, which during my season, during my really busy season, is usually late at night. I usually get on stage sometime between 8 and 10. Yeah. So my kids will be doing homework and everything. And then at some point I usually... I'm like, okay, which dress am I wearing? And the girls go into my closet and pick a dress and shoes and jewelry and zip me up. And my daughter, my oldest, my 11-year-old, does my makeup most of the time because she does a better job than I do now. And then the kids go to bed. Sometimes I make it home before they are asleep. Other times, if I know I'm not going to make it home, I'll walk home. So sometimes I walk 3 miles home. I always have flats in my bag, even if I'm in a cocktail dress. And other times I'll take a car, sometimes a subway, depending how early it is. And then sometimes I'll go meet friends for dinner afterwards if it's really late and they're finishing up dessert. I'll go hang out with them at the end. But that's a day in the life. So I think it's different. I sometimes wonder what my kids will say when they were growing up. But I will tell you, when I was 10 years old and I came to New York for the first time, I said to my mom, I'm going to live there one day. And she was like, really? Yeah. I was like, yeah. And I knew. I always knew I'd be here. No question.
And is your husband from there as well?
My husband's from right outside of the city, so okay. Like 45 minutes outside of the city. So his parents live there and his father comes in and takes our son to squash on Tuesdays. And it's a different life because I think there's more of a nightlife here, yeah. Which is what I love because I'm such a night owl. So that has always appealed to me that I can put my kids to bed and go out and have like a completely different experience and then be home to take them to school in the morning. And it's just, yeah. it's Madonna on a Tuesday night. And then in the morning, I'm not feeling great, but taking them to school.
Super fun, though. Is there anything about it that regularly feels like a challenge that you're regularly like, man, this is like really hard for city living?
Yeah, I think the hardest part right now is my son's age because he's not old enough. Like my daughter has after school sports and my son, we're still having to take him to the park. That's the thing about city. You don't have the backyard. You have the parks, but when the weather's not good. So that's always a challenge. I think we're lucky because my in-laws are very close. So my kids definitely have a house that they consider their second home because we can go there anytime. And we're there all summer. They have yard and grass and a club and they have that kind of life too. And when I go to Louisiana with my kids, they're just like, what is this life where we ride bikes on flat streets and we can just go without anyone? But as my daughter is 11 and she takes herself to theater with her friend, they walk to theater, which is 3 blocks away. And this is her home. This is what they know. I will say the greatest thing about having kids in the city, my mom is British. We've traveled my whole life and I can take my kids anywhere in the world. We were in Rome 2 years ago. We were in Barcelona last year. They walk and never think anything of it. They'll walk like 9 miles around Rome. And everyone's always like, how do you travel with your kids? Isn't it hard because they have to walk everywhere? I'm like, my kids don't even know that they don't know about Uber. I barely ever get in an Uber with them because it's so expensive. So I'm like, it's your feet or nothing, guys. So I think that quality of understanding how to navigate a city very easily. Oh, they have an underground just like we do. They have a system, a grid system just like New York. That's cool for me that they understand that. But you know what? They don't get on ATVs in the afternoon. So now they're going to have to come to nap and visit you, Kelsey.
I absolutely love that. I lived in 3 different states in high school. And I thought it was so important for me as a person to have all those different experiences.
Yeah.
And while I do not plan to move my family into the city, there are parts of it that I'm like, that would be so good for all of us. Like, we should go do that. So I think that it is important to get out and travel and have those experiences. It has been such a great time talking to you, Lydia. Before I ask my last couple of questions, where can everyone find you? We'll link both of your books below. Where would you like people to connect with you and come tell you the Valentine's Day bus stories?
Valentine's Day or bus, guys. I'm on Instagram at Lydia Finette, LinkedIn at Lydia Finette. Really, just if you Google my name, I have a website. If you need anything, if you're looking for an auctioneer, I have an agency of auctioneers who work for me. So feel free to slide into my DMs, as the youngsters say.
Love that. Now, you have accomplished so much. What is a goal that you're currently working on that you're really excited about?
I keep putting it out there as of last week that this is the year I need to write my third book. But I also have an idea of writing two more books. One's a children's book and one is finishing a fiction book about the auction world that I started probably 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So that's on my goal list.
And what about from a family or personal fun perspective? Do you have something this year that you're excited about unrelated to business?
Yes, we're going to France as a family. After COVID, was like, we're going to go to Europe every summer right after school to spend time as a family. No iPads, just the family, walking the cities, doing the things. So we're going to go to France. And then I'm taking my daughter to Taylor Swift in London. So that's going to be really fun. She knows it was like her big Christmas present. So I actually am more excited than she is. I think we're equally excited. So it's part of it. Everyone's like, I can't believe you're taking her to Taylor Swift. Like, I'm taking myself to Taylor Swift, to be clear. Yeah. She's just coming along.
So. And in London. I love that. That's amazing. Okay, so we've unpacked so much goodness today, whether it's being able to move to the city or the country, whatever you want to do, having confidence, overcoming mom guilt. If you were to give someone just one step, they're overwhelmed, they don't know where to start, we're getting off this podcast today, something that they could do immediately, what would be the one step?
Pick something a little uncomfortable, just a little bit, that you know you can accomplish, and do it. And watch how quickly you realize that the thing that's holding you back is going to be easier than you thought. So I'll just say, with exercise, be like, I've never run in my life, but I want to be a runner. Today, I'm going to run a quarter of a mile. Go out and do it. And you're going to do it. And then you're going to be like, maybe I could run a little bit more tomorrow. You got to start small, show yourself you can do it, and keep chipping away.
So good. Thank you so much, Lydia. Have a great day. You, your story, and what you have to offer this world fills me up. I want to meet you. Join me on Instagram at This Is Kelsey Smith, and let's create a ripple effect for Mamas with Goals. Together is better.